Good evening and welcome to Shattered Lives, a lively, educational, and issues-driven radio show designed to tell another side of the story, to focus on and humanize crime victims, to enlighten and shine the spotlight on organizations and service providers, and to assist those who walk the path with us. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, your host, and my co-host, Delilah Jones of Imagine Publicity, who is with me in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. So it's a pleasure to have all of you this evening, as it is every evening across the nation. It's a privilege for me to do this show, and we always try to bring you a diversity of great guests and topics. And we part of our mission is to give people a voice to deliver messages that maybe are not otherwise given. And tonight is no different. For the first time ever in 16 months, we have a police chief with us, and I'm very excited about this because it's in one of my favorite cities. It's in Horry County, South Carolina, which encompasses Myrtle Beach and Conway and some other towns as well. So before I bring the chief in formally, I want to bring in Delilah and say, good evening, Delilah. How's everything around your water cooler there?
Everything's going just fine, Donna. Thank you. I'm happy to be here again and appreciate you having me with you as a co-host, and especially excited to speak with our guest and let our listeners in the world know about her and who she is and how she got to where she is today.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, you live in a very interesting area in terms of a place that you have to police, in terms of it being, you know, a resort area, high tourist area, and it brings its own challenges to the fore, and we're going to hear all about that. But let me just introduce her very briefly, and then we'll get started here. Chief Sandra Rhodes is definitely a person who's a homegrown person. She was raised in Conway, and she worked for the Horry County Police Department for the last 20 years. She was hired as an undercover narcotics director, detective rather, and she worked for 3 years as a plainclothes narcotics officer. And she was promoted to sergeant, and she worked for community policing teams throughout the county at that point. She was promoted to lieutenant, where she returned to the narcotics division. And in 2006, she was promoted to captain, where she worked in criminal investigations and was a precinct commander. And then on February 17th, 2012, she was appointed as interim chief of police. And on this past September 2012, she was appointed to police chief of Horry County. And she also, among other duties, she is an adjunct professor at Horry Georgetown Technical College since 2009 and teaches criminal justice there. So I have to say that she's a very busy woman. She's very committed to what she does, and she's changing things for the better in her community. So Chief Rhodes, let me say welcome to Shattered Lives. It's such a pleasure to have you this evening. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Donna, and it's an honor for you to invite me. I appreciate it.
Well, yes, and it is an honor to have you, and we always learn so much from our guests, and to have your perspective on what's going on in your community, and for someone at your level of law enforcement, I'm sure we're going to learn a lot this evening. But as Delilah had said off air, she first learned about you at a meeting, and you spoke of how you sort of rose through the ranks, and that was a very interesting story in and of itself, and I wondered if maybe to acquaint our audience, you might want to start with that, because it wasn't the usual path, so to speak.
No, it really wasn't the usual path, I should say. Most people are hired as patrol officers. But I was pretty green when I graduated from college, so I just kind of needed a job. My degree was in criminal justice, and I just kind of bopped down to the police department to speak with the police chief. Didn't go to human resources or anything. But upon meeting with him, he decided that I may be better used in the narcotics area than I would be just as a patrol officer. And so he asked if I was interested in that. Now, I have to be honest with you, I didn't have very much experience with anything narcotics-wise, and but I needed a job. So I took him up on his offer, and that's where it began. And so I worked undercover, had a different name, different lifestyle, different everything. My driver's license was a different name, paycheck was a different name, and I did that for a year, just kind of hanging out in the seedy areas of Horry County, but I'll be honest with you, we hung out in some of the nicer areas of Horry County, too, in buying and selling drugs. So that's where it began. And so after that, I did, like you said, I was promoted to sergeant within the police department, and I began to supervise the what we called then the community-oriented policing and enforcement teams. And there we were able to actually put five teams throughout the county, community-oriented policing teams throughout the county, and it was a great experience. And I think that is where I truly found my love for policing.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of when they decided that narcotics would be most appropriate for you, was there a particular reason why he felt you'd be very effective at that?
Well, I have to tell you, this isn't something that you think about too often, but the reality is that a black female is probably the absolute best undercover police officer there is. The first person that society normally suspects of being the police is a white male. And then they suspect a black male, and next a white female. And so a black female is the least likely person to be suspected of being an undercover police officer. And therefore, I was pretty effective. I worked throughout the state. Not just in Horry County. They kind of loaned me out to some other agencies as well. And so it probably was based on his knowledge of the effectiveness of an undercover officer.
Oh, wow. And I imagine with that kind of a position, there's a certain inherent danger in that type of a position. I mean, how did you get through that time just on a personal level, knowing that you had to have another identity and you know, you're going into dangerous situations, et cetera, and you didn't have that much experience? What did that feel like?
I tell you, I think it just, I can attribute that to just being young and not knowing any better, probably. It was probably more of the adrenaline rush that kept me going. But, of course, it was dangerous. I was in some pretty dangerous situations, but I had really good relationships with most of the people that I worked with. And so a narcotics division is a division that everyone is probably closer than any other division within the police department, within a police department, because of the nature of the assignment and the fact that you have to depend on them. I have to know that they're there to back me up and that they're going to be in there when I need them to come in. So yes, it was a dangerous assignment, and I've changed my philosophy quite a bit on that once I began having a family. But back then, it was just the pure adrenaline and the need and the want to get drug dealers off of the street.
Mm-hmm. And was there a particular system or program devised as a result of your effectiveness, or did they recruit other people with similar skills and they continue to be effective in getting drugs off the street?
Well, not necessarily here in this department, but I know that there have been some other police departments that have hired other women because I've gone out and talked with them and assisted them in the undercover world. I've assisted them. So there have been some other agencies, but I don't think that we've done anything similar here since I was hired in Florida. That was 20 years ago.
I see. Wow. Well, As we said in the beginning when we introduced you, I know that your first love is community policing, and that is such an important area. And I wondered if you'd talk about that somewhat in terms of prior to you coming on as chief or interim chief, what it was like in terms of the interactions or the perceptions of the community and the police and how you, even in your short time as chief, you've made some inroads there.
Well, I will say that I think that because of some incidents that had occurred here with the police department, there was, I believe that we were starting to experience maybe a lack of connection with our community. We had went through an investigation, although there was, you know, there was no wrongdoing that was found, that perception alone. And so one of the immediate goal when I took over was to change the community's perception of the Horry County Police Department. And with that, and also to build a relationship with the community. I won't say rebuild because I'm not sure that we had actually had an established relationship, but that was my primary goal, to build a relationship with this community because we are a part of the community and therefore they are part of the police department. And mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure that that was known to our community.
And how do you do that exactly?
Well, it's a matter of going out and talking with the community and opening ourselves up. We have to have a certain level of transparency with the community in order for them to trust us. Traditionally, and I'll say back in our Andy Griffith days, I guess, everybody
right.
loved law enforcement. But we took some pretty hard hits with some videos and everything of police wrongdoing that didn't exist back then. And so it's a matter of trying to regain the trust of the community, going out and talking with them. We went out, we do community meetings with the community in areas that are, and that's probably more of our rural areas. In some of our areas, our coastal areas, we attend homeowners association meetings. We find out from the community what it is that they want from the police department, and we find we allow them to know what it is that we can do for them and what we can do together.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's worked out well. For the last promotional boards that I've had, I included the community. There were community members on both of the panels for my captains and my deputy chiefs, so the community can actually say that they had a say-so in the command staff of the Horry County Police Department.
Oh, that's real. That sounds really significant to have that input, yeah. Is there such thing as walking a beat anymore?
We do still promote foot patrols, and it's not something that happens as much anymore, but I do believe that foot patrol is a very effective policing method. It allows our officers to get out and speak with people. We, at one point, had bike patrols, and we are moving towards that. Probably in next year's budget, I'll be requesting funding to put some of our officers back on bicycles. It's probably more effective in some of the municipalities than it would be in the rural county areas, but we do have some areas that could benefit from foot or bike patrol.
How about on the beach? I saw a bunch of horses there last Thanksgiving. I don't know if you put bicycles on the beach, but that I think it's very important to be in touch like that. Would you like to ask a couple questions?
Yeah, I think at this juncture it might be interesting for Chief Rhodes to explain how Horry County has a police department, a county police department, but we also
right.
have city police department, Myrtle Beach City Police, we have Conway City Police, and how does that work all together as far as, jurisdiction-wise? When do you get involved, let's say, in something that may be occurring in Myrtle Beach under their police department?
Generally, every county in South Carolina will have a sheriff's office that's responsible for law enforcement in the unincorporated areas of that county. However, in Horry County, we have a county police and a sheriff's office, and I'll explain that in a minute. I'll kind of just keep with the question that you're asking right now. Now, the unincorporated areas, the incorporated areas of the counties are usually our municipalities, and they each have their own police department that is responsible for law enforcement duties within those particular city limits. The municipalities enforce state laws as well as ordinances that are specific, to their cities. The county agencies do have jurisdiction within the municipalities. We have jurisdiction countywide, but we're generally not call responsive within the municipalities, within the city limits. We do, however, we often assist the municipalities quite often. If we are nearby a call and the city is busy or tied up, we'll go in and assist. If the city, any city, calls us for assistance, then we're there. We have lots of our city agencies that are small and don't have some of the assets that the Horry County Police Department has. And so generally, if there's a major crime or something that occurs in those areas, it would be the Horry County Police Department's crime scene, our investigations division, and everything of that nature that would cover it. And so we really do have a very good working relationship, so much so that we have a meeting every month. All of the agency heads have a meeting every single month just to discuss issues that are specific to our county, to the cities within, and everything. And so it lends us to be able to work together. So in answer to your question, if there's an issue that's taking place, and right now I can give an example, of course it spills over. Criminals don't observe boundaries. Myrtle Beach City is having some major issues with some burglaries that fit the exact same method of operation as some of those in the county. So our two detectives work together to actually solve that crime and to arrest the perpetrators. And so we work very well together. Right now, what we're working on together with all of the agency heads are reentry procedures for when the governor calls for an evacuation of this county, of the coastal area, due to a hurricane. We have to get people back in. And that's something that is, you know, affects all of us. And so we're working on that together. So that we do work well together. That's pretty much, if that's answering your question, that we do have the municipalities and the county police, and then, of course, the state police that you asked about. They have jurisdiction throughout the state. But for the most part...
Mm-hmm. Sounds like many layers of the onion, a little confusing, but we know when you call 911, it's the local jurisdiction that you get, right?
Most of the time it is the local jurisdiction. Fortunately for us here in Horry County, a lot of the municipal agencies are on the exact same radio channel as we are. So we know what's going on in a lot of those areas. And so therefore we can work together.
Uh-huh. I see. Well, that's good that you have, you know, cooperation versus, you know, turf wars, because it could get ugly if it's like, well, that's our jurisdiction and it's not yours. You have to work together when it's, you know, when you have so many complex problems in an area. So that's really good to hear. You know, one thing that I've noticed as a tourist there, as a visitor and hopefully a future resident, is that your area is pretty unique in terms of it being a relatively small geographic area, high degree of activity, growing tourism, and with retirees moving there, a huge influx of them, seems to be ongoing construction all the time. Your roads only go east to west direction. And there's a very transient kind of a seasonal population, and high unemployment, and, you know, comparatively speaking, low wages. That to me, it's a challenge. How does this make for like a perfect storm, or how do you negotiate all of those factors in your area so that there's not chaos all the time, given all those factors?
Well, really, and I know with everything you just said, it sounds like a situation or creates a perfect storm scenario. But I think we're pretty similar to most coastal counties,
okay.
Especially, you know, those who are tourism based. But I do want to point out to you that only a very small portion of Horry County has high tourism activity. The majority of Horry County is actually very rural in nature, and that does create a unique aspect, you know, that you mentioned.
Okay.
That within 45 minutes I can go from beachwear stores and high-rise hotels on the oceanfront to cornfields and corner stores where everybody knows their neighbors, although they're likely to live about 2 miles apart from each other.
Uh-huh.
And so we truly are, we do have the beach side, but that is such a small aspect of Horry County. And because we were, you know, honestly, Horry County was created because of tobacco and cotton and things of that nature, and the beach really wasn't even that important when this county was initially created. Now, of course,
okay.
Tourism is the major function of Myrtle Beach and most of the municipalities along the beach. And truly, we're a large county. We're actually 1,133 square miles, I believe, and that's larger than the size of the state of Rhode Island. And so it gives us a little bit of a different dynamic. So what creates that perfect storm scenario is that the situation where I and my officers, we have to be pretty flexible, and we have to be able to quickly adapt to differing environments. Because those retirees that you spoke of that are truly moving here, it's my understanding that we have more retirees moving to South Carolina now than down to Florida. And I could be wrong on that, but I heard that on something the other day. The way that we deal with all of our retirees that are moving in, it gives us a total different population for us to have to adapt to, along with, like I said, in the rural areas. And we have some people, and I spoke with a guy, it's probably been about 2 months ago, who's lived in Horry County all of his life, and he said it's probably been about 5 years since he'd even been to Myrtle Beach. And I found it almost incredible, you know, that you could live right in Horry County and hadn't been to the beach in 5 years. So just to kind of give you a perspective as to the type of population that we're dealing with.
So do those people that are not at the beach, do they feel left out, you know, that were the mainstay before they focused on the beach?
I can't say that, and I have heard, you know, political-wise, there are times when I've heard people make comments about most of the funding maybe going geared toward roadways and everything because of tourism, and that sometimes they feel that the rural areas are left out. But when it comes to actual law enforcement, no. I believe that because most of my officers are probably in the rural areas. We do have sectors that are located at the beach because there are unincorporated areas at the beach that we have to cover. But as far as the law enforcement services go, I think we pretty much balanced it out. We actually just did a total realignment of our districts or our sectors so that we could, you know, evenly spread the call volume out a little bit. The South Precinct, and I need to back up and tell you that the Horry County Police Department has 4 different precincts throughout this county. And the South Precinct, which incorporates most of the coastal area of the county, at one point, just to kind of give you a clue as to the amount of calls that we have to deal with because of that particular population base, it encompassed almost 45% of all of the calls here in Horry County, just our beach area. And so our officers, you know, it does pose a different scenario for us, like you said, in that that's where our highest call volume is. It's normally not in the rural areas. So we've kind of figured out how to balance it with making sure that we have adequate coverage in our rural areas as well as adequate coverage in our South Precinct area. And, of course, the sectors are a lot smaller because the officers have a whole lot more call volume. So I could have an officer that has just a few miles to cover for their particular sector, and then I could have an officer that might have 50 square miles to cover, maybe about 25 square miles to cover just for his sector alone, his or her sector alone. So it poses a situation where we have to be more adaptable and flexible.
Right. I did see that article on the realignment, and I did put it on my Facebook last evening introducing the show. So, yeah, that seems like a very good approach. Delilah, I interrupted you. Did you have a question?
No, I was just going to make the statement that it's not that unusual for people who live here not to see the beach. I'm Point in case I'm like a half a mile, and I haven't been there in a year. So the water is out there, and we know it is, but summertime, forget it. It's all yours.
Well, you know, as local folks normally feel that way. I believe we have a greater appreciation for the ocean around September and October than we do mid-July. I assure you of that.
Yeah, and it was even nice in November. I was there Thanksgiving. It was beautiful. So, yeah, that's true. I think it's anywhere, whatever your landmarks or your tourist attractions, we take it for granted that it's there because we're here all the time. So that's true. Excuse me. Let's see. I just wondered, as part of your role, and I know you teach at the local technical community college, but with respect to local government and state government, what kind of interfacing have you done with them in terms of how you'd like to see changes and what's being worked on with your local politicians?
As far as with my county council, with the Horry County County Council, is that what you're asking?
Those people as well, or maybe right up to the level of the governor. Are there certain long range plans you'd like to see, and you have people in which you're interacting with for particular long range goals that you'd like to see?
With the, I'm sorry, you kind of broke up.
With your council,
yes.
Or maybe all the way up to your governor, at any level of politics, what do you see your role as being with regard to those folks?
For the most part, I guess, depending on them for assistance and maybe, I won't say educating them, but I feel like I'm in a good position to maybe turn some theory into practice. You mentioned my teaching at the technical college here, and with
right.
that, of course, I have an opportunity to know most of the effective theories for law enforcement, and so to be in a position to turn some of that theory into practice and to actually put it into practice. Create a situation for them to maybe have to adapt to a change in the way that things have normally been done for the longest time. For example, Horry County Police Department was what I consider to be a traditional policing department, where we would respond to a call, write a report, and move on to the next call. And so I've been able to effectively make some changes so that our officers could actually spend time getting to know some of the people in their communities as
uh-huh.
they're responding to calls, and giving them the opportunity to follow up on some of the calls that they go on, and not just
mm-hmm.
write a police report and not ever be able to truly assist people. And I think that lends towards greater work satisfaction for the officers. And
yeah.
But with that, I've had to go out and request additional officers. So I've had to request, you know, increases to the budget here in order to get done what I wanted to get done. And
mm-hmm.
so because of that, I guess maybe the education of some of those people is probably the biggest change.
Yeah. And how responsive have they been at each level with regard to the changes you want to implement or asking for more money in the budget, et cetera?
You know, I have to tell you that every year, last year's budget, I was able to get 8 additional officers added to the department, and this year I was able to get 7 additional officers for the
wow.
addition to the street crimes unit that we put a street crimes unit in place. That was one of the things that I set as a goal to address some of the gang activity and street-level criminal activity. And
yeah.
One of our council members, actually, he had approved it in the budget for those numbers, for those additional officers, but he called me up one day when we were, when he had gang graffiti at one of his areas in one of his districts, and some of his people constituents were complaining about it, and he said, and we ended up arresting the gang members for it, and he called me up and said, you know, I really didn't believe that we actually had an issue, and I thought you were just kind of, you know, tricking us into giving you additional officers for that reason.
Uh-huh.
But just because of that, and he saw what we were able to do, and he actually saw that there was more to me. I wasn't just making things up, that I was opening his eyes to the fact that Horry County does have gangs. It helped, because for years and years, we've kind of ignored any of the street-level crimes that we've had in relationship to them being gang-related. And so it's helped. I believe that I've been effective in educating them and as well as in working with them and getting them on board with me and trying to make this a safer county.
Yeah, well, it sounds like if the particular problem hits home and, you know, it affects them personally, then suddenly it kind of opens their eyes and, you know, it does make a difference. So that, you know, that sounds like it was very instrumental. It's true.
Well, because of the fact that you worked at the street level with, you know, for a number of years as an undercover narcotics agent, I'm sure, you know, you've seen a lot of things that weren't necessarily correlated with drugs. How do you feel about the situation in Horry County or Myrtle Beach on human trafficking?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that is also, I would put that kind of along – along with the thought process for years with the gang activity, we put our heads in the sand as far as that goes, and, you know, we did that with gang activity. Say, well, if we put our heads in the sand, then it must not be happening. And I believe that that we've probably done the exact same thing with human trafficking. Ever since I met Betty Hubion, I believe is her name, I've started to educate myself a little bit more, because initially, even when she approached me, I was of the thought process, well, this isn't even something that affects Horry County. But when I looked at it, it wasn't just people bringing in slaves and that kind of, you know, from other countries, which is what I was thinking. So I've had to educate myself a little bit to realize the extent of it. We have not had any major investigations concerning it, but I am truly more aware of human trafficking and the levels of human trafficking that it could entail.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's encouraging, and we give congratulations to our friend for pointing that out to you. I mean, it's a problem that nobody wants to talk about, but it does exist, like you said, just like gangs. So it's on your radar, and it's something that you're going to continue to observe and try to address, it sounds like, correct?
Definitely.
It's definitely the type of crime that is just coming into its own, so to speak, as far as education and awareness throughout our country. And just like you said, most people in the public sector believe that this is happening in third world countries, or we're importing, you know, Asian girls or whatever. That does happen, but it's also a fact that, you know, we have such a huge influx of young kids that come for spring break and vacation and then we also have a lot of foreign nationals that come in who aren't familiar with our laws and aren't familiar with our area, and it's so easy for them to be lured and caught up into something like human trafficking, whether it be for you know, sex slavery or agricultural labor trafficking, and it's just such an easy place to get people out of. If you think about it, they can just shoot down to Charleston, you have a port there, shoot over to 95, and you're going north, you're going south, you're going to Atlanta, which is another big hub. So, you know, I'm happy to hear that it is going to be something that you're looking into more heavily, and you know, hopefully the officers on the street will be trained what to look for.
Most certainly, and you're right when you say that Myrtle Beach is the type of place that you can easily get lost in. We have a large number of fugitives that come to the Myrtle Beach area simply because, you know, it's an area that nobody really knows each other. It's, you know, in the coastal regions, nobody really knows each other because everybody are tourists. And so it's really easy to get lost in the Myrtle Beach area. And so it's a prime location for people to lure young people in. And we realize that.
Yeah, it certainly is. It has all the elements. You can just kind of blend in with the tourists, et cetera. And speaking about young people, I'm wondering, with your emphasis on community policing, and can you talk a little bit about what you know about the juvenile justice system there, and what your efforts are toward? You know, is the focus setting an example for the young people that are there, such that you steer them away from you know, petty crimes and escalating up to higher level crimes, or just what is being done such that, you know, at that level crimes do not escalate?
Well, you know, we are working with several of our community leaders who have taken the lead on trying to come up with mentoring programs and educational programs to assist our young population. It's not something that the Horry County Police Department has taken the lead on, but I have most certainly partnered with some of them in trying to assist them. This year, we partnered with them on a gun buyback, in an educational forum where it was geared specifically towards our young people, just to try to assist them. And so we have, like I said, it's not something that the Horry County Police Department has necessarily taken the lead on, but I do have some concerns, and I've done some research, and we know that violence affects our 17 to 24 age range more so than any other age here in Horry County. And that's a concern for me because those are, you know, when you look at those years, 17 to 24, it's when some major decisions need to be made in life, and we are losing a lot of our young people to violence within that age range. And so I'm a huge proponent of trying to put programs together to deter our youth from getting involved in violent activity and violent crimes. I work with the Mothers Against Violence group pretty heavily in educating the public. We go out and I'll, you know, kind of go with them to speak to some of our youth, and because it's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, certainly. You have a son that's a teenager, correct? So you can certainly relate to what you know, what's going on today.
Oh, yes. I have a 14-year-old, and so I am most certainly concerned about what's going on with our teenage population and just our youth in general.
Yeah, for sure. And there are a good number of people in that age range who also maybe go there for vacation or want to, you know, escape reality, and they go missing. You know, we know of a number of people that we work with, and that is certainly an area of concern, as well as intimate partner homicides, another area. What do you think in terms of the different variety of crime that you see? Is there a particular influx of crime that concerns you most, or something that you're really working to get the numbers down on, or is it just that you're trying to effectively work with all different types of crime across the board with the programs that you're implementing?
Well, I tell you that when I say maybe not just a particular type of crime, but we do know that about 90 to 95% of our crimes are probably drug related, and and so it's and that's inclusive of our property crimes, and the property crimes are the type of crimes that affect most of our population. It's the violent crimes, you know, and with our violent crimes that we haven't had. I believe that I got to figure out what my numbers are with our violent crimes. And I believe in 2012 we did have a 10% increase in our violent crimes, but from 2007 to 2012 we actually had a 15% decrease. And so although violent crimes and gang activity is a major concern of mine, the property crimes that affect most of our citizens is something that I'm truly wanting us to be able to decrease our numbers in. And so with that, drug enforcement and drug-related crimes are the type that I am trying to address for the most part. So that's been something that we have been very cognizant of. And we're trying to be more proactive. We're trying to we're using some software and things of that nature to address some of the patterns of criminal activity. And so we're moving. We're using technology to assist us with that. But in answer to your question, probably those crimes, and about 90 to 95% of them, like I said, are drug-related. And so that is an area that we're going to have to address and that we're trying to address.
So they go and there's home invasions, break-ins, break-ins to vehicles, et cetera, so they can get things of value.
Yeah, so they'll have the funding. Yeah.
Right.
Yes, and a lot of times it's just crimes of opportunity. So one of the biggest things is educating our public. People, you'd be amazed at how many vehicles that are burglarized that actually were never locked. People will leave their valuables because they have this false sense of security because they live in a relatively nice area. And
right.
So most of these crimes are crimes of opportunity. People will leave their garage doors open, and then they're very surprised when their generator's missing when they come home from work. And so a lot of it is educating our public as well as trying to address the criminal activity.
Right. Even in our driveways, we should block it. We've had some serious crimes among people, you know, hid in somebody's car in the driveway and let let someone in and someone was killed in a homicide here in a town adjacent to me. So you just can't take anything for granted at all, you know. And can you talk a bit about the challenges? I know I've done a lot of research on this after we talked in terms of crime perpetrated by tourists and against tourists as well, and it's kind of its own breed, because there's certain things that are red flags, and for instance, you know, people go there and they're more carefree, maybe they drink more than they should, they don't lock their car, things of that nature. What have you seen in terms of the types of behaviors, and maybe something that our audience needs to know? This is still prime summertime vacation time. What kind of advice would you give to people who are either coming to your area or a resort area in terms of being a tourist?
Probably just not letting their guard down and just being aware. They need to understand that criminals, you know, don't stop at the border when they go on vacation, that there's no sign up that says, you know, only law-abiding citizens can come in. And so, but you're right, people do tend to let their guard down. They will drink, they'll not be concerned about whether or not their hotel rooms are locked, whether or not their vehicles are locked, and just in the places that they go to. So as far as that is concerned, my only advice would probably just to be aware of your surroundings and to know that criminal activity can occur anywhere. And that's educate yourself as to where you're going. Know what routes you need to take. Know what roads that if you get into an area that doesn't look quite right, turn around. And don't be afraid to lock your door and just keep going and not, you know, allow yourself to be a victim. Don't go by yourself alone at night. Out to do things. So, you know, we have the beach here, and everybody wants to walk the beach at night. But, you know, you make yourself a victim when you're a young girl, and you alluded to it earlier, although our numbers are not huge when it comes to our major crimes or people missing from this area, but we have had a few. And we've had a few scares as well with young girls that are out partying with some friends, and they end up getting separated from them. They put themselves in a position to truly be a victim. And and you know, we've like I said, we've had some that one girl in particular that went missing from the Myrtle Beach area, and we still have not, the City of Myrtle Beach Police Department have not been able to solve that one yet, or to bring any resolution to that case. But the biggest thing I would tell them is, you know, don't go out alone, don't leave your friends behind, or a particular friend behind if it's a group of friends, and just take care of each other if you're here.
Right, and I know the case that you're talking about. Yeah, very familiar with that. What kind of a police presence, I mean, because there's so many people that come in and there's gridlock with traffic, is there just a huge increase of traffic police that may be available to direct people or to assist people? What kind of extra supports do you try to put in place for people that come in during tourist season? How do you kind of, you know, prepare for that?
Well, I'll be honest with you, there's only about 3 times per year that we make changes to the way that we police. I believe because we've been doing this for so long, the department itself is geared, as well as some of the local municipalities, are geared towards the tourists anyhow.
Okay.
So our numbers normally are in place to address the average number of tourists that we have coming in. But we have 2 bike festivals during the month of May, and then we also have the 4th of July. And those are probably the 3 busiest times for us and where we have the largest increase in our tourist populations. And
mm-hmm.
so we do change the way that we police for those particular times. But outside of that, well, we really don't. We are already, we've been kind of policing for a tourist area since 1959, I believe, is when, you know, so we're pretty accustomed to dealing with the tourists and with the traffic from the tourists and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned earlier that you're using technology, like I don't know if you're geographic, the mapping technology to kind of spot where there's more influx of crime areas, et cetera, things like that.
Yes, we are. We've been our IT division, and luckily for us, we have a wonderful IT division, and it's more so, I won't say necessarily towards the population, but just the criminal activity and the patterns of it. And traditionally, our tourists have been pretty much doing the exact same thing for years, that we know what areas that they typically go to and what areas we're going to have the largest number of people, and we address it in that nature. So, yes, but technology most certainly is assisting us in changing our policing methods. Like I said, we're moving towards community policing. We're moving towards being more proactive in our policing and not just reacting, and therefore maybe doing some predictive policing. And I think that'll help our citizens more than anything else.
Oh, that's great. And your airport has just been renovated as well and expanded. Is that also a help or a hindrance in terms of dealing with the numbers of people now?
Well, I don't know that if it was what the impact of the new and improved airport is going to be. We do have a very nice airport, and as a matter of fact, that is one of the areas that we police. Actually have officers that are assigned to the airport, and it's larger. But I have not seen the impact that the airport may or may not have yet as to whether or not it's going to lend itself towards bringing more people into the Myrtle Beach area. And if so, I'm assuming we'll address that, but I have to say that I haven't seen any data yet that would suggest that we would look at, I know we have increased the number of officers at the airport because of the size of it, but as far as the impact on Horry County itself, I haven't seen those numbers.
I see. I'm just wondering, can you tell us, for people such as myself that may not be familiar with the different departments in terms of their expertise or specialization, what the different units do that are under you, your kind of structure of the police department, the various departments that you have?
Oh, most certainly. And I probably should have gotten into that before with just to kind of tell you a little bit about the Horry County Police Department. I believe that we now have about 280 plus officers that work here at the police department, and it's divided into our patrol division, our support services division, and our criminal investigations division. So we have those three divisions within the police department. Now, under the patrol division, I did mention that we have four precincts throughout the county. We have what we call our south precinct, our central precinct, our west, and our north precincts. And south precinct, like I said, really encompasses most of the coastal area, the beach area of the county. The other area is Central Precinct, and you mentioned the city of Conway. It's pretty much our central area because Conway has always been, is the county seat, so it's always been the central location of Horry County. Our west area, and for your listeners, this won't mean a whole lot to them as far as our Green Sea area, but it is really, really rural area for us. And our north precinct encompasses Little River, and so they may be familiar with that, with the Little River section of Horry County. And so we do serve very, very diverse populations here in the county within those precincts. As far as our support services division goes, it encompasses our school resource officers, our training division, and just areas of the county that of policing that most people would not even consider when they're thinking about it. But we have our IT division that if we didn't have that, we probably wouldn't be up and running. Our administrative records division. And like I said, training, which is imperative for all of our officers to make sure that they're being trained appropriately. And so with our criminal investigations division, I've just made some major changes to the criminal investigations division. We now have our narcotics, our crime scene investigation, our evidence division, and what we call our major crimes unit. And that changed. In that one of the changes that I made initially, we had our property crimes detectives that were a part of the criminal investigations division. But because of the makeup, I'm truly trying to decentralize the police department. I'm trying to put all of the officers out into the areas of the county that assign them to specific areas so they'll get to know who the people are in the areas that they are assigned to, and that's the same with the property crimes detectives. And so they are now assigned to all of the precincts. And
are there substations there, Chief, in terms of the areas that they're assigned to? Or do they all have to come back to the quote unquote headquarters like every day, or are they assigned?
I'm sorry. Our precincts are actually individual buildings. They're precinct buildings has a captain in charge of those particular precincts. So no, that's so when I say I'm decentralizing, which means I'm moving them from the central location here in Conway and actually putting them out into the community that they are assigned to. And so with our property crimes officer detectives, they now have specific areas. And what that does is allow them to get to know who the normal criminals are in that area. They kind of get to know what areas are affected the most by some of the crimes, just like the patrol officers do. But it also lets them know who the residents are in that area. And it forges more of a relationship. Now, so just kind of went off on tangent there, but we do have some specialized teams as well. We have our SWAT teams, our bloodhound teams, our explosive ordnance devices teams, and our negotiations team. I think that's all of them.
How about civilian employees?
Yes. We have those too. And our honor guard. I cannot forget our honor guard. We utilize them quite a bit. That is pretty much the makeup of the police department. We have a very good police department, a very professional police department, and we're truly moving towards the community knowing, you know, who we are and what we're about.
Mm-hmm. Are you getting good response with regard to local media in terms of advertising the good versus the bad, or at least equal time for both in terms of, you know, what you're trying to do in the community, instead of just reporting, you know, the crimes?
We really have been. I think that is just, it kind of goes along with the fact that we have truly tried to be a little bit more transparent to the community. And so we, kind of opened ourselves up. We're trying to let the public know what we're doing. And so it has given us an opportunity to truly forge a really good relationship with our media. And I have to give Lieutenant Kegler, who you spoke about a few minutes ago, credit for that. He does an awesome job. He's our public information lieutenant. And he does a great job with making sure that we maintain positive relationships with the media, which, of course, is the doorway to the public for us.
Of course, yeah, that's vital. That is along with, like you say, you're teaching at the college, and that's another venue to capture, you know, a captive audience in terms of getting out the positive as well. Don't you agree?
I agree wholeheartedly, and it also gives me an avenue for recruiting officers. Yeah, because I teach criminal justice out there, so I get to see them. And get to know them over a period of 2 years. So it also helps us there as far as being able to recruit some people.
Mm-hmm. Is there a big need for, you know, perpetually for more and more officers, or, you know, you're just having to hire, you know, a few in terms of how many the budget will allow? But if you had your way, you'd hire X number. I mean, does it kind of go like that, or does it go in waves in terms of what the immediate need is for officers?
Well, what we try to do, we try to keep a full staff as much as possible. But, for the most part, I think we have an average turnover rate. You know, every agency and every corporation, for that matter, is going to have an average turnover rate. And so we're pretty good with that. Our turnover rate, thank goodness, we recently went through some major turnovers in that the South Carolina police retirement system made some changes. And so a lot of officers were forced to retire. Officers that had 25 years in were forced to retire, or they would be penalized. And so because of that, I lost a large number of officers because of those changes to the retirement system. So I've had to do some major hiring. But it's not necessarily a bad thing, because I'll be honest with you, when you look at transforming a police department from traditional to community-oriented policing, it entails quite a bit of changes. We have now changed the way that we train our officers. We changed the way that we hire our officers. So it's given us an opportunity to get some new people in to be able to mold them and let them begin their career as community-oriented policing officers versus having to endure changing the way that they've done things for years. So it's not, the turnover rate hasn't necessarily been a bad thing for Horry County.
Yeah, and the new blood kind of might be more receptive to, you know, what the new techniques are, et cetera, and that's a good thing. That sounds great. You know, I wonder, we have about 4 minutes or so. We haven't really talked too much about what is the day in the life of a police chief like? Could you kind of, I know that every day is probably very different and, you know, things come up that you don't anticipate every single day. But if you had to describe what a day in the life of being a chief there would be like, could you tell us a little bit, give us a little bird's eye view?
You know, I always use the example of I'm like a hamster. I feel like I'm constantly going on that little wheel and never really going anyplace and getting anything accomplished. But honestly, it's busy. I go from, you know, I never know what I'm going to deal with when I walk through the door. There's a certain level of politics that I've been just realized that I'm having to deal with. I didn't quite know that much when I initially took the job, but I do have to interact with some of our local politicians on a regular basis. There's a lot of liability that I have to be concerned about. I realize that I have been party to numerous civil lawsuits against the department just because of the position that I'm in. I get served sometimes. I think I got served a couple of months ago, and it said Chef Sandra Rhodes because it was an inmate that was suing the police department.
Oh,
and
dear.
And he spelled chef, C-H-E-F, and left the I out of chief.
Yep.
And so, yeah. And but I also have to deal with employee issues. Thank goodness I have two very, very good deputy chiefs of police that can handle, can help me with the internal operation of the police department, because a lot of my focus I've found has been external. I do go out and try to speak with the public and educate the public and about what the police, who the police department is, and what it is that we do. And there are times when obviously it's stressful. You know, we have some major incidents to occur, and we just went through a major fire here, and we lost several condos. And I know you say, well, it's the fire department, but the police department is involved in that because we're all one public safety division here, and
right.
So that. You know, that was something that was a major issue. It took a lot of manpower, so juggling manpower. Right now we're concerned about flooding that may take place within the next few days because of all of the rain that we've had and with expecting more rain. And so now I have to look at maybe putting officers on post to prevent any type of looting in some of those areas. And so it can be a full day. And
sure.
I tell you, I would get so frustrated. I'd go home stressed out about something, and then I'd get an email from one of my officers telling me how happy they are working here and some of the changes that we've made and how it's improved his work environment or her work environment. And that changes the entire perspective for me, I have to say. So, yeah,
it's wonderful to get that at the end of the day.
Yes. It does. It balances out, and it makes me very happy to be in a position to do everything that I can for the citizens of Horry County as well as for the officers of Horry County, because I feel like I have two sets of customers in that.
Wow. Well, it sounds as if you were in kind of the right place at the right time in terms of, you know, when you got promoted from interim to chief, and it sounds like you're loving what you do. I know certain things you're working on now. What do you foresee for your tenure and for the future there?
What I hope to be able to do is to provide a police department that is genuinely concerned for the community. And at the same time has the support of the community. I'd like to see our crime numbers decrease. I think that would be very beneficial, but at the same time that's not the only thing that is important.
Yeah.
I think knowing that the police department and the community are intertwined,
right.
And both are working together to make our community a much safer place to live. That's at
yep.
the end of my tenure. I would really like for Horry County to be a safer place to live than it was.
Right. Could you share any kind of contact information in case someone, either locally or nationally, would like to get in touch if they have some questions, or you could refer, or Lieutenant Kegler could refer them to someone with regard to the issues we talked about today?
Most certainly. My email address is rhodess@orrecounty.org, and let me spell Horry County for you.
Okay.
HorryCounty.org.
Wonderful. Well, it's been such a such an informative hour. I've enjoyed it so much. Chief, I hope you and I can keep in touch, because we have a lot of things in common. I hope to do that, and I want to thank you so much for your time. I know you're so busy. We really do appreciate it. So I have to say good night, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Shattered Lives. Be sure to wait for the blog and the embedded podcast tomorrow, and we'll see you next week for another episode. Thank you, Delilah. Thank you, Chief. I'll talk to you off air. Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Delilah and Donna.
Okay. Thank you, too.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Thank you.